Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Man, tired. I ain't gonna lie. That was a lot of running right there that I did, and I don't think I was gonna be able to go that next play. So I just, this whole thing, I just needed a break right there.
That was Anthony Richardson after the Colts lost to the Texans on Sunday. He scrambled, was sacked by Jake Hansen after a brief scramble.
Yeah.
And on second and goal from the Texans' 23-yard line in a game the Colts were trailing by 10. And after that, he tapped his helmet and said, I need a blow, man. I need to come out,
it
coach.
Is. You know, some people have said, hey, what's the difference? How come, you know, other positions sub out all the time? Why is it a big deal with quarterbacks? And it did occur to me, oh, yeah, he is a running back, really, at the root of it all. So in that moment, he's more just like a running back, that because he's not a genuine NFL quarterback. Anybody who actually watches Colts games can see that. He's a running back who's capable of making some incredible throws.
Yeah.
But God, no, you don't want him back there every down. The guy would throw for 30%. He's not a genuine quarterback. He's a running back who does some gadget. This is the Colts' problem offensively. Too many gadget plays where they line up Anthony Richardson at quarterback. That's really their
issue.
They
spend the whole game in Wildcat.
Yeah,
with
yeah.
Anthony Richardson.
So to answer, because I see some people trying to ask or genuinely asking or making the point like, hey, they do this with other positions. The difference with quarterback is that 100 years of NFL history tells us that quarterbacks, the good ones and the bad ones, are just not wired to want to take themselves out of the game because they're a little out of breath. That's your offense. It's third and goal. You're down by 10. If you're the quarterback of that team, you need to be out there running your offense.
Yeah.
So it's not like some prearranged package deal where you bring in, you know, it's not Drew Brees leaving the game so Taysom Hill can come in or something like that. Like, no, that's your offense. And by the way, you're still trying to prove yourself. I can't even believe I just mentioned Drew Brees in the same breath as him. You're still trying to prove yourself as a guy that can, A, stay on the field, and B, be an NFL quarterback instead of a glorified gadget running back.
Hey, are you surprised? We'll get to the NFL's QB development problem that I'm being told about on Twitter yesterday in a second. Are you surprised that when they brought Flacco in, they just had him hand off for like a 5-yard gain and kick a field goal? Like, I'm thinking, like, when I saw Flacco come in, I didn't know anything about Richardson tapping out. I thought Richardson was... He hadn't been holding his left wrist earlier in the game. I thought he was hurt. And I was like, or I thought maybe they were going with like maybe a situational 2-quarterback thing. Like, hey, it's third and goal from the 23. Let's go with our guy that can actually throw an accurate 23-yard pass. I was surprised, like, when he just handed off, I'm like, oh, okay, you're just going to take your 3 and get out of here.
I'll give Shane Steichen a little bit of a break in that probably just like every other NFL person, coach, or player was kind of dumbfounded when they heard the reason for why Anthony Richardson was out of the game. He probably had a moment of shock.
Oh,
like he was probably trying to process it.
Yeah.
When he should have been like, yeah, all right, take a shot now. Because you're right. That is exactly the time to take a shot.
For sure.
Whenever there's any kind of change like that, the defense is thinking, you got the defensive coordinator thinking, like, oh, okay, wait a second, Flacco's in the game. What do we have to do? And like that could be your moment to pounce. Yeah, they should have taken a shot at that point, and instead they just tapped out. Shane Steichen tapped out right after.
He did!
Right after Anthony Richardson tapped out.
How can you blame Richardson when the guy that's leading him is a tapper-outer as well?
They're all tapper-outers.
They're tapper-outers, man.
This is like the Montreal Screwjob. They're tapping out.
They're tapping out.
When there's actually no reason. There is no tap out. There's no tap out there.
No.
Right? Isn't that what happened in the Montreal Screwjob? There was no actual tap out. Called it a tap out.
Yeah, okay. The referee screwed over Bret Hart.
So it's the opposite of the Montreal Screwjob. This is a tap out where there shouldn't have been a tap out.
Hey, not to get too far off, have you finished the McMahon documentary yet? Or are you still in the middle of it?
I think we did. Yeah, okay. We did.
Okay.
We did, yes.
Yeah. It's really good. I'm surprised all the people watching it that don't even like wrestling and they're really enjoying it. It's cool. So is there a QB development problem in the NFL? When Richardson got benched yesterday, it was kind of fun as a Texan fan to bask in the afterglow of like, hey, look at the top 4 picks in the 2023 draft. 2 of them are benched and 2 of them are Houston Texans.
Yeah.
Oh, and they were the offensive and defensive rookies of the year last year. It was also fun to look at the first 4 quarterbacks taken in that draft and go, wow, 3 of them are benched and 1 of them is C.J. Stroud that's not benched of those 4. You know, 3 of them are benched and 1 is a bona fide stud and it's C.J. Stroud. But if you go back and look, and this is where like it really gets hammered home, like there is a gap here right now with good NFL quarterbacks, starting with the 2021 draft and going through the 2023 draft. And I'll just take the first round picks, but there were five in the 2021 draft. There's Trevor Lawrence and four guys who are on other teams now. And their rookie contracts aren't even up yet. Like it's Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson is on his second team as a backup. Trey Lance is on his second team as a backup. Justin Fields is on his second team. He's a backup again. Mac Jones is on his second team. He's a backup. And then you had 2022, and the only thing saving that draft is Brock Purdy coming out of nowhere in the seventh round. But Kenny Pickett was the only first-round pick, and he's on his second team now in Philadelphia. Look, if history shows us anything, recent history, Bryce Young, Anthony Richardson, and Will Levis, at least one, if not all of these guys, could be on different teams next year.
I don't look, is there a quarterback development problem? Probably. It's just if you look at how few reps quarterbacks that get drafted these days are taking in college. I mean, CJ Stroud, it was like, oh, he's got 2 years
two
of
years.
Starting experience.
It's like 5 years from
Ooh,
back in the 90s.
Yeah, it used to be teams didn't, which I don't want to get caught in the used to be, because that's not always, they didn't always do things better, but quarterbacks are coming into the NFL with less experience, and then I think there are higher expectations for quick turnarounds than there used to be in the NFL. Coaches get fired more quickly. Quarterbacks are, you know, pressed into playing under non-ideal situations. But I think you also have to factor into the fact that a lot of guys that, if they were playing any other position, relative to like what kind of a prospect they are, they're guys are getting drafted in the first round who aren't genuine first round prospects at quarterback. It just because people are so desperate for that position, they're willing to take a gamble on guys like Anthony Richardson, where in the past it would have been an extreme project. Teams might even say like, "There's no way in hell we're taking him with a first round pick. Mm-hmm. We'll see if we can get him in the second round. Then he can sit for a few years and learn." But the Colts drafting him and then just hoping for the best, I think that's where they are. I think Shane Steichen is still probably the best guy to develop a young quarterback, but there are limits to what he can do to a guy who is so obviously way behind the curve in terms of starting quarterback experience. He didn't even know that he was supposed to be running out of bounds or trying to run out of bounds there on the final drive. He checked into a play and then threw an obvious and easy interception in his own end zone at the end of the half. He did a lot of really dumb stuff in that game. And it's like he needs time. Like, this is a guy that they probably should have realized, like in hindsight, realized, all right, that year sitting on the bench didn't actually do him a lot of good. He needs more time sitting and watching somebody operate.
Yeah, and it's funny too. You look at all these names that I just rattled off from the three drafts, the 21, 22, and 23 drafts. And you're right, a lot of it is stuff like, okay, should have seen that coming. You know, like Bryce Young. Yeah, I loved Bryce Young. I wanted the Texans to get Bryce Young. But yeah, as it turns out, being 5'10" and frail is kind of an issue in the NFL. And you know, Anthony Richardson, everybody knew he couldn't throw. Like, he was inaccurate and had injury issues. He goes fourth. Will Levis, who was rumored to be a top 10 pick throughout most of that draft process, winds up going with one of the first picks in the second round to the Titans. And it turns out a lot of the warts he had in college, not cured. He's still really careless with the football and really careless with his body. Kenny Pickett was a reach in the first round in 2022. Zach Wilson going second overall. Like, he was small and a little douchey, let's be honest. Trey Lance. These are all things we knew. You know what I mean? We knew Trey Lance played hardly any football because of the COVID restrictions in college.
And I really think a lot of those guys, and you can point to their physical prowess or anything else, especially with Anthony Richardson, in prior eras, they would have been second or third round picks and been seen as the projects that they were. But now you're caught in this world of, okay, we're drafting him this high. We got to figure out what he is. Let's throw him out there and see what he's got. And like we talked about yesterday, you can't go back. You can't run the experiments on what's the best way to handle this specific player.
Right.
Josh Allen struggled in his first couple of years and, you know, figured it out. He did some really stupid stuff too. So I don't know if you know, given different circumstances, Josh Allen wouldn't have been any different. People were trying to say that Josh Allen would have been, like, he had the exact same first couple years as Anthony Richardson. The first 8 games of his second year, he at least had a 61% completion percentage and 10 touchdowns to 7 interceptions.
Yeah.
But he was by no means a finished product. And they were also winning football games,
too. They
made the playoffs that year. So it's disingenuous to try to make a comparison to Josh Allen. Josh Allen was a better quarterback in the first half of his second season than Anthony Richardson was.
And yet I think a lot of what made Richardson so high up for the scouting community and ultimately for the Indianapolis Colts was Josh Allen's ability to finally refine himself as a thrower. Like Josh Allen, for bigger quarterbacks that maybe have accuracy issues, he's going to become to teams what Tom Brady playing in his 40s became for aging quarterbacks. Like, well, look, Brady's doing it. I can play till I'm 45. Brady's doing. Oh, you're a big guy that has accuracy issues, but you're you're an athlete that was built in a lab. Well, Josh Allen did it. We can refine you just like Josh Allen was.
Josh Allen basically ruined the Colts for us. So thank you, Josh Allen.
Good job, Josh Allen.
I will donate money to your charity. That's what you do these days.
Yep.
When somebody from another team helps you out. Yes.
Good job.
And we saw this coming after Josh Allen's first All-Pro season in his third year. Like, oh boy. Teams are really going to look at this and think, okay, yeah, we got to look at these guys that have freakish arm talent when it's good, but they have accuracy issues, but they're also freakishly athletic.
Yeah.
Then, yes, that's our guy.
CJ is literally the only quarterback. Well, and Brock Purdy, too. I keep having first rounders in my mind because that's what's listed on this tweet. But Brock Purdy and CJ Stroud are literally the only two young quarterbacks out of that three-year period that their teams probably feel good about. Because I know Trevor Lawrence is in there. There's no way the Jags feel good about what they've invested in Trevor Lawrence right now.
Yeah. And guess what the average hit rate in any given draft is on finding a quarterback who's a solid, consistent starter in the NFL?
Very low.
I'd say it's about, like, historically, once every couple of years.
Yeah.
You know,
Texans got one.
There's just not that many good quarterbacks in the league.
Yes.
So I don't wring my hands as like, oh, these, which by the way, too, don't cry any tears for quarterback busts in the NFL.
Oh, no.
Yeah. If they could have made themselves better, and B, they get paid a boatload of guaranteed money to suck. So,
And
everybody crying a river for Anthony Richardson. He could have handled it. If the guy had a single clue about how to actually operate as an NFL quarterback, he wouldn't be in the position he's in.
Okay, that's
right
interesting.
Now.
That's interesting because I think the other benefit they get to Seth, these highly drafted, yes, they get paid a lot. Some of it's on them for sure.
Yeah.
They also get multiple opportunities. You know, Baker Mayfield finally hit on his fourth team. Sam Darnold finally hit, it seems, on his fourth team. Do you think Richardson? Do you think Richardson's in that category where if it doesn't work out with the Colts, he's such a specialized, you think?
Oh, yeah, yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Okay.
He'll get opportunity after opportunity.
Okay.
Because he'll be treated the way he should be treated, which is, all right, this guy's got a lot of upside, but we got to figure some things out, and let's see if we can be the ones to do it. And if you can get him at a relative bargain, plus, wherever he goes next, people will understand the downside and the expectations won't be the same.
I just think there is something fundamentally he cannot do, and it's throw accurately. You know what I mean? Like with Baker and Darnold, they had all the skills to be an NFL quarterback, but they had coaching changes and again, some of it's on them. But I think, like, fundamentally, at the end of the day, the one thing you've got to be able to do is throw the ball accurately.
Well, and it's like, I don't know, if somebody has a beautiful stroke on their basketball shot, and, you know, like, wow, look at that, it's beautiful, but he's hitting 15% of his threes, at some point you got to realize, all right, he's just not accurate.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
It's beautiful when it goes in.
Yeah.
Look at the arc on that thing. But it's just, you're not getting it done. And some of the decision making is just so atrociously bad that he needs a lot of work. And this is, so you can't treat all first round prospects the same. And I don't think the Colts have given up on him.
Right.
But he was getting worse as a quarterback.
Yeah.
He was worse this year in a lot of ways than he was last year.
Yeah.
And I just love that it's happening to the Colts, though. So have fun with that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Text message, 5-Hour Energy fan line. Xavien Howard, Jakobi Meyers, go get them. Yeah, Xavien Howard is still out there.
Xavien Howard is available as a free agent.
Right.
So I don't know what the deal is with him. Steven Nelson's still out there as a free agent.
He is.
Depending on, Steven Nelson retired, but I don't know if it was because he wasn't getting offers or what have you.
Right.
So Xavien Howard might be in that same boat where he's going to play, but he's going to play for a salary that he feels right. I have no idea.
Yeah.
Because Xavien Howard's play took a dip in the last couple of years. So where is he as a player? I don't know, and I don't know what the price tag is. But certainly, I would say Steven Nelson, there's other factors that factor into it. I don't know where he is, kind of in the estimation of D'Amico Ryans and Nick Caserio,
two guys that
he's both insulted on social media. So,
yeah,
those guys intrigue me more, though, than some of the trade candidates, just because it might just be a price tag issue as to why they're still out there.
Yeah, you don't have to give up draft picks to get them.
I
think that's a fair point. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Where are the Texans right now? Like halfway through the season, where are we with the Texans? Where is the head coach and the quarterback? What is their assessment of the team and where they are here at the somewhat mathematically sort of halfway point here, 8 games into a 17-game season? We'll get to that coming up next.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
All right, I had the Texans before the season. 11-6 was my prediction. I had them at 6-2 after the first 8 games. Now, I'd have to go back and see if I had the right 2 games that they lost. I'm sure I didn't have them losing to Minnesota before the season, because Minnesota was not thought to be what they've been for the first half of this year. But Texans are 6-2, 8 games in, and we'll see how the second half plays out. Here was D'Amico Ryans yesterday, Seth. How do you feel about where your team is at the halfway point?
I'm excited about where our team is. I mean, to be sitting here right now, 6-2, we're excited about where we are. As you mentioned, a lot of ball ahead of us, we talked about starting fast, and we've started fast. Our team has found a way to win in different fashion, whether it's offense, defense, special teams, different areas of our team stepped up and made plays to help us win games. So I'm excited with where we are and excited with where we're going, and we continue to build the right way.
Okay. So 6-2. I'm excited about 6-2 as well. I think at the halfway point, you go, okay, they played in a lot of one-score games. Could very easily be very different than 6-2 if the ball bounced differently in several of these games. How do we feel about the things that have been keeping them from being a more aesthetically pleasing 6-2?
Right, right.
How do we feel about those things getting fixed?
Honestly, I don't want to make it as simple as addition by subtraction or anything else like that. I do think there is some merit to the idea that without Stephon Diggs, then it becomes that much more heightened for CJ and everybody else to understand, and Bobby Slowick to understand, that the hopes and the dreams that you're praying for are not always downfield, that the check down is your friend, that getting the ball to the hot route when you're getting blitzed, that's one way to get the blitz off of you. You've got protection issues. There's things that you can do to scare some teams off of the blitz, including just getting those, okay, you're going to blitz, we're going to get a steady diet of 5 and 10 yard throws, except that every now and then, because you're blitzing, some of those are going to break free.
Yeah.
And because you don't have safety help on the backside.
Yep.
So in some ways they might be a smoother offense without Stephon Diggs, and I'm not blaming Stephon Diggs for it or anything. But then when Nico Collins comes back, obviously that has a whole different element to it.
No doubt. The one big thing coming into the year, one of the big things, was we've not yet seen Bobby Slowick put together a competent, consistent running game, like a competent, consistent NFL running game.
Yeah.
And it's strange because they've got a running back who's having an incredible year when he's healthy. When Joe Mixon's been out there, he's been really, really good. They're better running the football. Do you feel like their running game that they have right now is more they've got Joe Mixon on the team and they're running the ball, or they've actually started to put together a competent run game?
I'm torn, because I thought versus the Packers and the Patriots, all right, the Patriots especially, you look at it and you think, okay, well, those are some impressive numbers they put up, but it wasn't consistent. They weren't really churning out positive yardage consistently.
Big chunk plays.
Yeah, it didn't feel like something you could really depend on, especially maybe versus better teams. And Then the Colts, I'm torn because, all right, we've seen this before against the Colts. I think the Colts just aren't that team that's going to test your run offense, your ability to run the ball. So I feel better about the fact that Joe Mixon is out there. But no, I'm not 100% convinced that they've really figured it out in the run game.
Yeah.
I thought there were more elements and more instances where the entire offensive line was blocking well at times in the run game the other day. I don't know if the Colts were the test.
Joe Mixon, by the way, mic'd up. I watched it. Really good. It's about 8 minutes. It's excellent. He's really good. Some mic'd up guys are better than others. Like, a lot of mic'd up are just guys going,
lots of grunting and stuff.
Yeah, a lot of grunting. Joe Mixon, there's a fair amount of grunting in Joe Mixon's mic'd up, but he's pretty funny and he's pretty good and he's very vocal on the sidelines too. He's walking around the guys talking. I'm assuming that's what he's like most of the time. You know, you never know.
You don't think he's just doing it for the airtime?
I don't. I think there probably are some guys that realize they're mic'd up for the game and maybe, you know, handle things. But I sense that Joe is like that all the time.
There's always the guy who's a media darling, but who's actually annoying because he talks too much.
Mm-hmm.
And those guys, when they're mic'd up, it's probably super annoying to everybody else on the team.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, great. Now he's mic'd up. So we're going to get the extra version of this dude. Awesome. Great.
Now
Ray Lewis obviously was a good player who could say whatever the hell he wanted, but they used to call him Red Light Ray.
Yeah.
Which is if he was on the sideline and he saw that one of the cameras had the red light on, which meant that that's the active camera.
Yeah.
He'd go into super Ray Lewis motivational mode. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
He knew how to play it. He was a showman.
Even the pregame speeches and stuff. If you talked to a few of the Ravens from back then, you know,
they were kind of like, it's
cool, Ray.
I always wonder about that with the pregame speech too. Because on any football team, whenever somebody's given a speech, there's usually like a hardcore diehards right at the nucleus of it.
Oh, yeah.
And then there's some guys out on the periphery who are kind of like taking care. I'm doing, this is what the team's doing, but I'm thinking about what I got to think about. With the guys like Jameis Winston, there's at least a few guys who are in the front row of the pep talk who know they're going to get on camera. You know, they're like, I'm going to really play it up. I'm going to just, Jameis,
And on that one Jameis one where he eats a W, those guys who got the front row for that clown show are so mad because the one guy getting attention was, who was it? It was DeSean Jackson. It was like standing five rows behind everybody with this look on his face like, what am I watching right now?
Oh, no, the EW, he was right there. He was
Okay.
Yeah. That's why I think, because you could.
I thought he was kind of in the back a little bit.
In my mind, you know what? That's in my mind. Yeah. So we'll fact check that.
Yeah. But it was funny. Here was C.J. Stroud. This is where C.J. Stroud feels like the Texans are at the halfway point.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's a goal we had was to start fast. And, you know, I believe that, you know, we've been putting on some good ball, but we have a lot to still clean up. And, you know, it's just exciting times. You know, it's coming into the two hardest months of balls, you know, November and December. You know, we get to in October on a prime time game, and, you know, it's going to be a great matchup against the Jets. And, you know, we got to be able to be ready and try to finish October the right way.
These next few weeks are going to be something like Houston. Forget about the team. Like, I can't remember a stretch of football over these next few weeks that I've experienced as a Texan media member or fan where you've got a Thursday night, a Sunday night, and a Monday night game, boom, 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 all in a row, and they're all against teams. Like, there's no mid-team on here. You know what I mean? Like, the Jets are 2-6. I'm talking about marquee value. I'm talking about marquee value. Like, you're going to New York to play the Jets. That game's going to have a lot of eyeballs on it, for sure. You come back, you're then playing at home on Sunday Night Football against a team that a lot of people think is the best team in football right now. The Detroit Lions are at the top of a lot of people's power rankings, and they're a team that I think is, in a lot of people's minds, they're as close to kind of like a clear-cut favorite in the NFC as you can find. And then again, I know the Cowboys suck, but you're going up to play the Cowboys, who you play once every 4 years by rule, other than maybe a rando 17th game here and there. And that's what this is, actually. This is a rando 17th game that the Cowboys are your extra game this year. You're playing the Cowboys on Monday Night Football. And so going into the season, I could ballpark the first eight games, Seth, at 6-2, which I did. I looked at the last six, which is all division games and the weird Christmas Chiefs Ravens thing, which I don't feel good about playing the Chiefs and Ravens right now, regardless of the date and the amount of time in between the games. So I looked at those last six. I'm like, it feels like 3-3. These three games, I had no idea what to think before the season. And now that the Jets are bad, or at least have a bad record, and the Cowboys are kind of teetering a little bit right now, I still don't know how to feel about these three games because the schedule's so weird.
The Lions game is going to be the one that I think people are probably looking at and just thinking and wondering, all right, is this where, don't let this be like the trip up to the Patriots in 2012, where, okay, this is, all right, this is the real, this is what we should expect. This is not the team that we were hoping they were based on their record.
Yeah.
The Texans went up to the Patriots in the infamous Letterman jacket game and just got thoroughly drubbed and showed that they weren't in the same class. I think that nothing the Texans do against the Jets is going to make people feel differently about that. You know, if you could win by 21, there's still going to be people that are nervous about that, especially given that a team in the Minnesota Vikings, which they've fallen from grace and sweetheart status as of late, but they're still above the Texans in most power rankings. They're like, you got drubbed by the Vikings. The one outlier is that you took care of business against the Bills.
Yeah.
The Bills now, though, they didn't have Khalil Shakir, and now they have Amari Cooper. So what exactly is this version of the Bills versus the one the Texans played? But on the sum total of it, look, they've had one good game against one of the best teams in the league, and the Bills, they've had one really bad game against the Vikings. I think that Lions game is the stamp of authenticity on exactly what this Texans team is.
You nailed it. You nailed it. I think that's what that Lions, not to get, you know, ahead of this game tomorrow, but I think that's,
I'm looking ahead.
No,
Sean.
No, it was me that
trap
did this.
Game for radio hosts.
It was me that did this. So I'm just saying, like, I get it. There's a game tomorrow, but look, I would stress the importance of this game tomorrow. I think the Lions game factors into that. I don't feel great about playing the Lions until I know Nico Collins is back for that game. I really don't feel great about playing the Lions. The Lions are playing some incredible football right now. You lose this game to the Jets, and you're staring 6-4 in the face. You know, And the Colts just made a change at quarterback that makes them a whole lot more likely to be 6-4 in a couple games as well than playing Anthony Richardson for the rest of the year.
I think the coaches and players feel the same way that most Texans fans do if they're being honest with themselves, which is, I really like a lot of things that the Texans are doing, but they do need to take another step. Like, there needs to be a step forward offensively to be genuinely good and genuinely threatening. And a lot of that might just be fixed by a better left guard. Some of that is going to have to come from the offense in total, and C.J. Stroud included, and Bobby Slowick in distributing the ball more evenly.
Yeah.
And that becomes there's no choice about it now. You've got to distribute the ball evenly, especially without Nico Collins. But then with Nico coming back for that Lions game, that's where it gets super, super exciting.
Yeah, it gets fun.
If it works out that he comes back for that game completely healthy, I hope his hamstrings felt great for three straight weeks, then you're pretty much fully loaded with the team that you could conceivably have in the playoffs.
Yeah, and if you get a win this Thursday, that means you went 3-1 in the three games without Nico Collins. And if somebody told me that before, if somebody told me that the day he went on IR, hey, you can sign this piece of paper and you're going to be 3-1 in these four games, I would have taken that.
And that you didn't have, Stephon Diggs for one and a half of those games.
Correct.
Well.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
a big part of it.
No
doubt.
All right, the weakest link on offense right now. Will Kenyon Green be starting this weekend? Let's listen to D'Amico Ryan's answer in the next segment. Did we get any sort of answer as to who's starting at left guard? And we'll do that coming up next. But I want to tell you about Texas Star Grill Shop right now. Texas Star Grill Shop, the Martin family. They are the first family of grilling, barbecuing, cooking out here in the city of Houston. No doubt. Built from the ground up, man. Texas Star Grill Shop, the original location on 59 and Shepherd. If you are looking to upgrade your backyard barbecue game, or you're looking to get your tailgate game going a little bit, maybe an outdoor kitchen at your home, get to Texas Star Grill Shop. Why? Well, not only do they have the best grills at the best prices, but they've got the experts there that are going to get you exactly what you need. You describe to them exactly what the types of things you'd like to cook, the frequency with which you do it, the times of year you like to do it. They know exactly all the boxes to check, and they're going to say, this is what has worked best for us or some of our customers. They're going to make great recommendations for you. You get all the accoutrements to go with everything, including your OG sauce from John Lopez, all the meats, all the rubs, everything else, all the utensils, the wood pellets. They've got there at Texas Star Grill Shop as well. This is the place to go for your grilling stuff. Texas Star Grill Shop, TexasStarGrillShop.com to find the location nearest you. They are the best. It's Texas Star Grill Shop.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
On the text page, the five-hour energy fan line is aiming high on the trade market. I'm hearing the T. Higgins might be in play for the Texans. Oh, yeah, root against the Bengals this weekend. Might get a little T. Higgins action. Maybe they get a little desperate. He's on a franchise tag right now. So, yeah, who knows?
I forgot about all the T. Higgins semi-drama of the offseason.
Did you see there was a video?
And there's been rumors about him to which video is this now?
The video. As long as we're talking about the Bengals, like real quick, there's a video. Andrew Whitworth did an interview, like a podcast.
Yeah,
and he did like 6 minutes about his constant negotiations and renegotiations with the Bengals.
I watched like 30 seconds of it. And I'm like, I don't have time for this.
He went for six. I didn't make it to the end, but there was some interesting stuff in there. Like by the third renegotiation, I'm like, all right, I get it. They're really unprofessional to deal with, at least with Whitworth they were.
They're a strange organization. Yeah. They are a really, really weird organization. Not as weird as they used to be.
Yeah.
They used to be incredibly weird. Like, Sean, this is the weirdest thing I can remember was back in the day. You know, the NFL teams, I think it's still this way. Maybe it's changed. But they did I want to say it was a 2-to-1 match on your 401k, whatever was legally allowable, which was a nice chunk of change.
Dude.
For absolutely nothing other than you committing money to your 401k, the NFL would match it 2-to-1.
2-to-1.
And for God knows what reason. On most teams, it had like near 100% utilization.
Yeah.
The Bengals, like nobody was doing it. And to the point where the NFLPA had to figure out, like, what the hell is going on here? Like, the Bengals would try every which way to try to screw you out of money. And, I have no idea how they got away with whatever they were doing to discourage guys from signing up for the 401k.
Dude.
But it was, Jonathan Joseph has told the stories about how they charge you for Gatorade and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they've changed. They've gotten a little bit more free spending, but they're still a weird organization.
They're discouraging you for doing it. That's like that should be a union issue if you have a team.
Well,
it should.
Yeah, I don't remember exactly how it was all figured out or whatever. It was just very, very odd.
But I would say even if they're not encouraging you to do it, when you have that little usage of a 2-to-1 401k match, like to me, it's malpractice not to send an email out to say, hey guys.
Well, this was long before Eric Winston was up there or anything.
Right, and these aren't guys who are, like, fully educated on financial ramifications.
No, but this is how the meeting goes. The NFLPA meeting where you're, and I don't think it's in a meeting, but where you're trying, well, like, back in the day, you'd sign a piece of paper instead of e-signing or whatever. It was the veteran players telling the young guys, dude, sign that paper. Yes.
Right.
You're going to, and people would be like, but that's, it was like a $10,000 max and you'd get a 2-to-1 match.
Yeah.
But you know, the young guys are like, yeah, but wait a second. So I don't get that money?
Like, I got to wait?
Yes, you do. But it'll be there waiting for you someday after, by virtue of you asking that question, yes. You put that money in your 401k right now, damn it.
Yeah, it's free money.
It's free money.
It's free money, yes.
But I don't get it now.
Right. No, you got to wait. You got to wait till
Yes, you do. You just can't touch it. Yeah, it's exactly what you need.
It's yours.
Desperately.
It's yours. Kenyon Green. D'Amico Ryans was asked yesterday in his press conference, will Kenyon Green be starting on Thursday against the Jets?
Kenyon is done fine. Kenyon, of course, like I said yesterday, he had some bad plays. A lot of guys had some bad plays, you know, and everybody's asking about Kenyon, and nobody feels, you know, worse about this than Kenyon, right? And nobody, he knows he has to play better. He will play better, and let's go to work. Like, that's what it's about. It's not about everybody trying to figure out, is Kenyon out? And like, let's Kenyon is ready. He'll be ready to roll. And we won 6 games with Kenyon. Like, we got to keep going.
So this will be interesting. If Jared Patterson had stayed healthy in that game, it might be less interesting because Jared Patterson might for sure be the starter. I guess the big question would be, how ready is Kendrick Green to play? And does it even matter? Is a we're not sure how ready Kendrick Green is better than what Kenyon Green is right now?
It felt when Kendrick Green didn't get an opportunity to go in the game, despite Kenyon Green having been benched just one series prior, that's when it most felt like, oh, first round pick. All right. Oh, he's going to get that. He's going to get that benefit of the doubt. Either that or they just are that down on Kendrick Green. And then the question is, all right, well, why is he on your roster? Like, why is he active on game day? If he's that much worse than one of the worst offensive guards, a guy who's playing like one of the worst offensive guards in football right now, why is he even out there? Other than because he's your gadget fullback at times, which is stupid as well.
Yep.
So, I don't know. I don't know. There's no good answer to that. And I look, you know, D'Amico's trying to put, you know, trying to support Kenyon as much as possible and not try to give any noteworthy clips or anything that are going to filter back to Kenyon. Saying that we won six games with Kenyon, that's not D'Amico. That's not his ethos, you know. Yeah, you guys are you're a mediocre NFL offense right now. To pretend that there aren't any issues that can be improved or anything that needs to get better, that's not, D'Amico doesn't operate that way. So I take that strictly as just him trying not to sell out his guys in public.
I do too. I hate that he's in that spot, you know. And he's, you know, and look, D'Amico's an adult. He chooses his answers. He can answer it any way he wants to. That's his management style, if you will, as he has said many times, is he manages with an air of positivity. Like, he's always going to manage that way. That's who he is. He said it earlier this week. I just hate that, I hate that D'Amico is giving quotes right now that you could put next to quotes. If you cross out the names, you could put them next to quotes from Lovie Smith, and you wouldn't know if Lovie Smith said them or not, you know,
right,
about the positivity.
Right. Yeah, well,
gotta stay positive about these guys who are playing tremendously poor.
I think the big difference is you're 6-2.
Correct.
So you get away with it a little bit more when you're 6-2. Hey, the proof is in the pudding. We're 6-2. But they need to make some improvements offensively. Yeah. They just I can't think of this team as a Super Bowl team until they look like a Super Bowl caliber offense. It's 2024. Yeah, it's awesome. It's awesome when you get that rare one-off. And frankly, this Texans defense is very good, but they're not like the Ravens, the first Ravens Super Bowl team.
No.
You know, they're not the 80 whatever Bears. It's right. Just they're not there yet. To win a Super Bowl with this squad, you would either have to have the defense go from really damn respectable to
great,
out of this league and all-timer. So maybe that happens, or the offense has got to look better than they have in the first half of the season.
Right, right. Or you just have to hit one of those weird parlays where you're winning the turnover battle +3 in all your playoff games.
Or just kind of in the part we keep forgetting about is, oh, yeah, Nico Collins, that guy.
Yeah, that's right.
A deep shot from Nico Collins on the first play of the game goes a long way towards winning the game.
It does.
And that there's that element. And Joe Mixon and Nico Collins being on the field at the same time, which we've had very little of, that's another dynamic. And maybe it's as simple as that.
Yep.
It's hard to, obviously, you know, there's a million different scenarios that could happen, but some of it is as simple as, oh, wow, having Nico Collins and Joe Mixon on the field at the same time, that really puts defenses in a bind.
I'm going to go on the record and say I think there's a 50% chance we get Kendrick Green. I think there's a 45% chance we get Kenyon Green, and a 5% chance we get the tightest back to left guard, Blake Fisher at right tackle, curveball.
Okay.
That some have been asking for, believe I can.
Right.
That's where we are with Kenyon Green, is people are requesting Titus Howard play left guard again.
I don't know. Titus is so much worse as a guard that I can't. I'm trying to figure out, all right, but do I like Titus's time in system and all of that other stuff at left guard compared to just Kendrick Green at left guard? Because Titus, if Titus was a prospect, I'd say, oh, yeah, maybe he's got upside as a guard. But Titus is a veteran who I've seen play guard before.
He's got no upside.
I give Kendrick Green a whirl and see what happens.
Yeah, yeah. Here was, speaking of pass protection, here was C.J. Stroud. He was asked yesterday, how much of your prep goes into trying to forecast what your pass protection is going to look like?
I mean, it's bullets flying, you know, it's very fast paced. Sometimes, you know, you can see it, sometimes you can't. Sometimes you can get away with it, sometimes you don't, you know. So it's like rolling dice. But at the same time, I trust my guys, and I'm not going to, you know, just as much as possible, I'll try to stick in there and, you know, and just, you know, step up in the pocket and make it right, have those minute movements. But, you know, I do a lot of film study on, you know, hots, and, you know, that's kind of the world we live in, is, you know, throwing hot and, you know, trying to, you know, just live on in what we do and not, you know, dictate, not don't let them dictate what they want us to do. So, you know, and I think I've, you know, tried to, you know, get some more responsibility up there, and I'm hoping the coaches, you know, continue to trust me with that. And but yeah, you know, it's a part of the game, and you know, I gotta, you know, be better, I guess, when it comes to that. And you know, we all can be better together as one.
Well, and that's where, you know, CJ in the first half of the season, on the sum total of it, was really good against the blitz until the Packers game, where the Packers didn't blitz that much, but they were really effective with it when they did. And there's a little bit of, he had a throw to Dalton Schultz last week, where, all right, Schultz was the hot receiver, Texans got a blitz, and he just hit Schultz immediately for 10 or 15 yards, however long it was. Like, you got to do more of that to get him up off you, you know, to really discourage and to put some fear in the defense about, like, where you are exposed when you're blitzing. And I think there's, CJ talks about how it's a little bit of a gamble, you know, it's a little bit of the roll of the dice. Sometimes I think he hangs in there and thinks, well, if the protection holds up, Diggs is gonna be open downfield. And I think CJ knows that there's that potential on blitzes to hit deep shots, because guys are going to be in man coverage, no safety help, and you've got a chance for a huge explosive play there. But you also got to balance it out with, yeah, but there's also easy money right there against the blitz. Be that quarterback that teams say, ah, crap, we can't blitz this guy.
Yeah.
He's going to, like, one way or the other, he's going to screw us if we blitz him. And just keep him off you a little bit.
Yeah, that was statistically, that's who he was in his rookie year, man. He killed, like, if you blitz CJ Stroud, he killed you last year.
And so, Nico, look, the presence of Nico is a big part of
huge,
all of it.
Huge,
yeah, you know, yeah. Nico is, it's a lot easier to make a blind throw to Nico than it is to anybody else.
True. Absolutely. All right, we head into the 9 o'clock hour. We'll talk more Jets, Texans as we get you ready for tomorrow. 7:15 kickoff, 4:15 Texans countdown. One of the strangest scenes that I've ever seen in a baseball game, certainly a World Series game, happened last night. Fans, what should the punishment be for what happened last night early on in World Series?
The weirdest things we've ever seen.
Game four. It was this, yeah, one of the strangest things ever. We'll talk about that coming up next.
It was weirder than a quarterback tapping out. It was so many weird things. And you know when it feels weird? It feels weird if you've been in an accident. Not just because you're in physical pain, but because there are a lot of questions that you don't have answers to and you don't necessarily know where to look. That's why you go to Mokarem Injury Lawyers. Ben, Mokarem Injury Lawyers is going to get a bonus one here, since I'm supposed to be doing a read for somebody else. But Mokarem Injury Lawyers, when you've had an accident, is on your side, and they are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. This is what they do. They've helped out thousands of Houstonians when there is situations such as yours. Mokarem Injury Lawyers. Call them. They'll pick up the phone 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. 281-222-2222. That's 281-222-2222. Mokarem Injury Lawyers, 281-222-2222.